Blog Talk Radio.
Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, on Monday, May the 1st. And today, like we like to do, we'll be chatting with our good friend Fausta Rodriguez Wirtz. She's the editor of Fausta's blog. We're going to be looking at Latin America, and especially today, we'll be looking at Venezuela. We have a guest will be joining us in a minute by telephone from Venezuela, and that's our good friend Comandante Cazorla. We're going to get a report from Venezuela itself. I mean, it's right now the country is going through a great deal of turmoil. So we want to hear from somebody who's there and who's following the news on a daily basis. Let me say hello to all of our friends at Babalu who are listening. Thank you very much for your support. And we always appreciate the great stuff and the great support from our friends over at Babalu. Let me say hello to Fausta Rodriguez Wirtz. She's the editor of Fausta's blog. How are you, Fausta?
Very well, Silvio. How's it in Dallas?
Absolutely lovely spring day. It's just an absolutely great day. It'd be great if we could do the show outside because it's just absolutely lovely, the day that we are enjoying here. How about in South Florida?
Humid and in the 80s, so no change on that respect.
All right, very good. Well, we're going to focus on Venezuela today because it is really the big story of Latin America. In our second segment, we'll talk a little bit about NAFTA and Mexico and May 1st and the idea that this could be the last May 1st in Cuba with a Castro in power. We'll get to that in the second segment, but let's say hello from all the way down in Venezuela to our good friend, Comandante Cazorla. How are you, Comandante?
Oh, very well. And you? Fausta. Hi.
Thank you.
No.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much for your joining us today. I know it's a little crazy down there in Venezuela. I guess I need to ask you as well, how is the temperature there today? Is it nice and warm?
No, it's raining.
Oh, raining. Okay.
Yeah, it's been raining this morning.
Okay.
In Caracas,
well, I'm going to ask
Caracas, the situation at the time is raining, but there was supposed to be a march from the opposition and from the people of the government, and now it's a special war in Venezuela, in Caracas, because it seems that the people mix themselves.
Very interesting. Okay, here's what we're going to do. I'm going to ask you a question, and then Fausta will ask you a question about the situation there. So let me begin by asking you a question that is has many of us in the outside of Venezuela very intrigado, intrigued with the political situation of President Maduro. How is the situation of President Maduro in your viewpoint right now, Comandante Cazorla?
Well, the situation of Maduro is getting worse because he is trying to survive in the government. Survive, even though some people say that Maduro still has around 20% of popularity, and the people say that this popularity is higher than the president of Colombia or Mexico and the Chile. But what they don't say is that he has almost 80% of unpopularity or rejection from the people of Venezuela. And the people stay calm for a few months until Maduro tried to use a cope with the Supreme Court that tried to eliminate the people from the Assemblea, the National Assemblea, and that put the people back in the street, and we have about almost 25 days of continuous protests and complaining, and the people in war with the government almost. It's been about 30 people killed by the government. They have about almost 500 people in jail, but that don't stop the people. And the international government say to get position against the country because the bad news that the government have been done to the people and the people killed because the army is not acting very hard to the people, so they armed civilians to make front against the people that are in the opposition.
Yeah.
And this is not liked by the people of Venezuela and the international people that has done that the OAS, the Organization of American States, to have a meeting for asking the democratic letter and obligate Venezuela to call for elections and for obey to the law of the America, the personal rights, the people personal rights, and always they are trying to put in the street to all the politicians that are in jail in this moment.
Right. Let me ask you a very quick question, and then I'll pass it to Fausta. We here in the United States, we are reading that there are many people in the inner circle, people around Maduro, who are hoping to see a change, meaning Maduro replaced by somebody else. What do you think of that?
No, I don't think of that. The political party of the Maduro, the Chavismo, they are a party with what they call they obey the rules. That's a party with discipline, and Maduro is the president of the party. Maduro is the president of the country, and everybody obeys Maduro. Even though the second in charge, that is Diosdado Cabello, he's trying to take a different way to solve the problem. But the people of the party don't obey him too much. Because, as I said before, this is a party with discipline, almost militarized, and because the people...
Yeah, go ahead and finish. Go ahead. Okay, now, I was just going to give...
Most of the people who make essence in this party are military. So I don't think that the internally they disobey or they are trying to change the head of the party.
Right. Let me pass it to Fausta. Fausta, go ahead, please.
What does the National Assembly look like now? Are there any opposition members allowed to actually attend the meetings of the National Assembly at all?
Could you talk a little bit more slow?
The National. She was asking about the National Assembly. Si hay oposición en la Asamblea Nacional. That's what she was asking. Right? Is that right, Fausta?
Sí, si permiten que
no.
Miembros de la oposición vayan a la asamblea.
Yes, the opposition has the control of the National Assembly. And as all we know, the people from the government in the assembly are minority. And very, very, very little of them, or very few of them. So the National Assembly is working after the countries of Latin American countries begin to take away their ambassador after the position of the Supreme Court, Maduro has to change that decision and recognize the National Assembly and to change the that intention to disappear. So the National Assembly is working as it is, even though the National Assembly in this moment are trying to put away the magisters that made the decision to eliminate the National Assembly. And they have a little discussion about this thing now.
How is the economic situation? President Maduro today said that there was going to be an increase in the minimum wage. How did you react to that?
Well, I don't know. I don't know who is telling Maduro what to do in the economics. Venezuela is suffering for a really high inflation, and one of the highest in the world. Any economist will know that if you are in inflation, if you put the salary top, that will bring more inflation. So I don't know why Maduro thinks that this measure of putting up the wages almost 60% up. Something good for the people. And today, he took this measure, and I don't think not too many people is happy about it, because
yes,
all we know that will bring more shortage, more unemployment. It's going to bring, of course, more inflation.
Yes, and how about shortages like medicine and critical supplies? How is that doing?
The situation is critical. We are now a little bit more in better way because they opened the customs. You know, they opened the frontier. And we can go now to Colombia or Brazil or to Curacao and all these countries that are around the Venezuela to go for medicines or even for food and for, you know, tires for the car, parts from the car, and things like that. Are very, very expensive.
Mm-hmm.
So
yes,
to solve our problems with because we have to buy with dollars, and the dollar is very difficult to find in Venezuela. And
that's right.
You have to buy it at the black market, and
right,
in the black market the price is very, very high, but made difficult.
Yes. Well, Comandante Cazorla, I want to say thank you for your time and for joining us today. I know it's a very difficult situation in Venezuela, and I want to send you my warmest regards, un abrazo, and I want to wish you and your family the best during this very, very difficult time. We're all thinking about you, and we're all hoping for a good change in Venezuela as soon as possible, because we know how difficult all of this is for you and for all of our good friends in Venezuela. So thank you very much for your time, and I hope we can do it again soon.
Well, we thank you too, because we need the most help that we can to get out of this difficult problem.
Yes.
I say that this is one of the worst situations that countries in Latin America have had in the last century.
No, I agree. I agree with you 100%. Have a wonderful day, Comandante, and hopefully we can talk to you later. Have a wonderful day.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. We're gonna take a little break. And we'll be right back right after this.
This is Carlos Quedes, Heartbeat, and I would like to see you guys this Saturday night at Nola Brasserie Authentic Cajun and Creole Restaurant, located at 1201 Main Street, downtown Dallas. I'll be performing instrumental high-energy jazz at 7:30 until midnight. So make your reservation today at 469-872-1820.
Well, this is Silvio Canto. Let's get back to our show with Fausto Rodriguez Wirth, the editor of Fausto's blog. Fausto, he said a lot of interesting things, Comandante Cazorla, today, but I thought there at the end he said something very profound about this crisis that Venezuela is going through. And really, I cannot think of too many other times in Latin American history where a country has been going through what Venezuela is going through right now, Fausto.
Especially at the speed that it has gone. I mean, Venezuela has totally collapsed in less than a dozen years.
Yes, and you know, when he was talking about, you know, medical supplies, I know we have spoken about that before. You look at some of these pictures and you see the frustration of people. You see the demonstrations. I think he said, I didn't quite understand it, but did he say seven people have been killed? Is it seven? Or because he also spoke about 500 who have been arrested. So, I mean, these are some pretty big numbers, Fausta.
Yes, and the number of the people killed varies. Some estimated over 30 since the latest demonstration started. So, I mean, who knows? The thing is, the regime has armed these colectivos, which are essentially street gangs that are at the whim of the Chavistas. So it's difficult to tell, I would expect, to figure out which people were murdered by them and which people were just murdered by criminals in general, because criminality is such a big concern, too.
Yes. And now, you asked the question about the assembly, and I thought that was a really good question, because what has happened, maybe you can explain, Fausta, to someone who may not be familiar with Venezuela, but what they basically did is there is no opposition to Maduro. I mean, this is the closest thing to a one-man dictatorship that has existed in Latin America. Probably the closest thing would be Cuba, Fausta.
Yes, and the thing is, that is what provoked the letter of condemnation from the Organization of American States. They want Venezuela to resign because it has failed in the Charter of Democracy. All members of the Organization of American States have to swear that they will abide by democratic principles, and obviously Venezuela is certainly not. So that's why I provoked this latest letter from the Organization of American States. I don't know what that is going to end up like. So, but at least the OAS has done something constructive. The OAS, as you know, and your listeners know, have not done anything about Venezuela for a very long time.
Now, what President Maduro did, and explain to me, because I didn't quite understand the story. Did he actually pull Venezuela out of the OAS formally, or was he simply sort of like in a protest, you know, when you call your ambassador from another country? What exactly happened?
I am not very clear on that. Venezuela claims that they are starting the process to withdraw from the OAS. I do not know what the process is and how lengthy a process it could be. I mean, but they did say, the Venezuelan regime did say that they are pulling out of the OAS. Now, how long is that going to take? And whether it's symbolic or they're just, you know, using it for propaganda or whatever else they have in mind will become clear a little later. But for the time being, yes, they said that they were pulling out of the OAS.
Yes. So I guess we have to accept that as either a formal withdrawal or just pulling out, whatever exactly that means. But just overall, now what about the United States, Fausta? What role do you see here for the United States, if any? I'm not talking about a military invasion, but I'm talking about from a diplomatic standpoint. Could we be doing more at this time, Fausta, to be squeezing the Maduro regime? Could we be doing more, Fausta?
Well, the United States is in an interesting situation on this. First of all, I'm sorry to say, all of these problems in plural in Venezuela are essentially self-inflicted. I mean, they voted for Chavez. They kept him in power for a very long time, and on for after he died, and for over 12 years now. So the United States should not be involved directly in much, because first of all, it's going to be counterproductive, in my opinion. And also, there are a number of things that the United States is already doing, such as El Azizi's assets, which are very sizable in the United States. El Azizi is the guy who is the Maduro's vice president at the moment. His assets had been essentially embargoed in the United States. They are frozen by the, I believe, the State Department because of his action with drug trafficking and so on. So hold on a second. Let me.
Yeah, we're talking to Professor Rodriguez. Are you there? Okay.
Yes.
Are you back with us? Okay, go ahead.
I am. So in any case, so I think the United States is taking the correct approach at the time. This is the kind of thing that I don't think that it's going to go much further unless there is a concerted effort from all the countries in Latin America to show Maduro that his country is achieving essentially a pariah status similar to that of South Africa during the apartheid times. And
right.
I think that's rather unlikely
exactly.
because Venezuela is paying off a lot of countries with what's left of its oil even to this day, or at least attempting to.
Mm-hmm.
So
that's right.
We'll see how it develops.
Yeah, we'll
see
how it develops. I'm
so vague about it, you know, but it's a bad situation, and I believe it's going to be getting worse anyway.
No, I agree with you. I think it's a horrible thing, and as you say, it's just getting worse by the minute. But I think what would help in my mind, if not tangibly, at least morally, would be for more countries in Latin America to stand with the people of Venezuela and verbally stand with them and express at least their support for the people who are putting up such a good fight in the streets and protesting. I mean, what we're seeing there is tremendous valor and courage on the part of many people in Venezuela who are taking a huge risk, as you explained, with these colectivos. They're taking a risk every single day in opposing the regime. Well, we'll keep up with it. I know your blog is doing a great job of keeping us informed, and our good friend Daniel Ducanal in Caracas as well, with his blog and some of the others that, as well as some of the news agencies too, who are reporting as much as they can. Well, let's switch, Fausta, for a quick second to Cuba, speaking of Venezuela. This is May 1st, and of course this is a big celebration in Cuba as it used to be in a lot of communist countries. It may very well be a big celebration in Venezuela too, or at least they'll try to have a big celebration. And there are reports in news agencies that this is going to be the last May 1st in Cuba without a Castro in power, because as you know, Castro is leaving or retiring at the end of this year. What he will do next year is not exactly clear. But I have always felt, Fausta, that once the Castro is gone from power, that they didn't do a very good job of creating the next level of leadership. I mean, there are obviously in the next level of leadership, but I'm not sure how well they can run the mess that Raul Castro is leaving them. And then on top of that, there's a recession in Cuba right now, which is not making things any better. So how do you see this issue of this May 1st being the last one without a Castro, Fausta?
Well, as you have heard me say many times, I'm becoming the world's worst cynic. So I would be extremely surprised if any of the Castros, and I don't mean Raul, but the younger generation of Castros and the people who are embedded in the regime for over two or three generations at this point, I would be extremely surprised if they would give up power, especially when it involves that much money, because you have to realize that in Cuba, the military are entrenched, or the ones running the tourism industry, and the Castros are well involved in that. So forgive me for being such a cynic, but that's how I see it.
But I think that's very realistic, because And in fact, that's kind of how I feel too. I think he's going to be running things from the background for the simple reason that I don't think he's going to give the keys to Castro Inc. to a bunch of other people who may screw it up. I mean, the fact is, as you indicated, this is a huge business for the Castro brothers and for the Castro family. And, you know, they're not going to give it away. They're not give it away to a bunch to a leadership that may not be able to hold it. But there is going to be pressure, though, on this new leadership once there is no Castro around. I mean, I don't think people are going to have the same emotional connection with the new leadership that they did with Castro, Fausta. So there is a risk in making a change like this, Fausta.
And I think that's why the regime has been cracking down on the ladies in white and the rest of the opposition. I mean, it has been getting worse since the United States eased relations with the Cuban communist regime. And I think that's one of the reasons why.
Right. And I'm glad you mentioned that because you're exactly right. I'm glad you mentioned that about the ladies in white. But go ahead.
They're signaling to anybody who might be getting any ideas that this is not going to be all, you know, games and fun after Raul officially quits.
Right. And he's supposed to do that at the end of the year, as I understand it. Let's go to Mexico, where there's been a lot of talk about Mexico lately, namely NAFTA. What do you make of that, Fausta?
Well, I wouldn't be surprised if there is some kind of negotiation on NAFTA, because that was one of the things that Peña Nieto and President Trump both agreed on. As a matter of fact, it was one of the very few things that they both agreed on when President Trump, when he was a candidate, visited Mexico. They both want renegotiation on NAFTA. They may want it for opposite reasons, but at least they both do. So it wouldn't surprise me if there is. I don't know what form or shape it would take. It may involve some concessions from the United States in order to get better for the United States immigration laws. It may involve tariffs or the lack of tariffs and that sort of thing. This is coming. I mean, by all means, it's definitely coming.
Right. And I keep thinking that Mexico always wanted to renegotiate NAFTA. They've been wanting to for some time. They're under a lot of political pressure internally from the left, and even from some of the agricultural interest and even some of the business people to renegotiate NAFTA. And probably from the Mexican standpoint, the worst thing that ever happened is that it was Trump who came up with the idea first. Had, let's say, anybody else been elected, I think you would have seen Mexico bring it up first and say, hey, let's renegotiate NAFTA. But I think you're probably right. I think the only thing that Mexico is probably looking at is some way of at least being able to continue to send people to the United States and to continue to have those people send money back to Mexico, because I think right now that is the most important component of NAFTA to Mexico. I don't think the trade both ways means that much to them, but I do think the immigration issue means a lot to Mexico, Fausta.
Well, especially the financial subsidies, because the remittances are bringing more money to the country than either the tourism industry or the oil industry, which are the other two largest sources of revenue for the Mexican government. However, in trivial things, the big story in Mexico right now has to do with the singer that died, Juan Gabriel, and his estate, which is, by the way, being contested in Florida, in the courts of Florida in the United States, which shows you how the money is flowing. I mean, it sounds trivial, but it's another case where the well-to-do in Mexico have been taking their money outside of the country.
Right. Now, is the will being contested in Florida because that was his official residence, or is that because his wife, his widow, or his family? Because I understand from just news reports, not necessarily news reports, but information after Juan Gabriel died, that he had children who live in the United States and a wife who apparently either she was a common law wife or a regular wife, I don't know, but she lived in the United States, so maybe that's why it's being contested in Florida, Fausta.
Well, as I understand it now, I realize that I'm not a lawyer, but as I understand it, wills are contested in the jurisdiction where they are filed. In order to have a will, you have to file it. So, in order for a will to be valid, it has to be filed at a certain jurisdiction, and that's the jurisdiction where the wills are contested. And in Juan Gabriel's case, apparently there are 4 children from his wife. There are 2 other people who are claiming to be his child, plus he had a boyfriend who was not named in the will, but has been in the media too. So it's a very convoluted case. The media in Mexico have been talking about it all day, and to put it mildly. So it's revealing how the assets have gone from the country to other places, namely the United States, not just by poor people, but, you know, the people who had real money. Juan Gabriel is the largest selling artist, performers, singer in the country, in Mexico's history. So we're talking sizable amounts of money.
Right. Oh, I'm sure. But he had, as you know, huge following up here in the United States as well. But you're right. It really shows, you know, as they say, money talks, and follow the money, and that'll usually take you to where people's intentions really are. But I do believe this situation with the boyfriend who was not listed in the will certainly changes the meaning of that song Amor Eterno that Juan Gabriel recorded many years ago. What was it? Eterno Amor. I don't remember which one it was, but it was a very popular song that he had in the radio years ago called Amor Eterno. I'm sure his. But it really is a tragedy because there's so many people involved and so much money. I guarantee you that there's going to be a lot of lawyers who are going to be very busy. But I'm wondering, though, I mean, about he must have had residence in the United States then, because I always understood that he lived in Ciudad Juarez or in Chihuahua, where he was from, and he was always being presented as this great citizen of Chihuahua, but apparently not. He was always in Florida, and that's where the will was originally written or validated, Fausta.
Silvio, I am confused by the entire thing. I am confused by the number of children, their names, the size of the estate. I mean, the whole situation is like something out of a Mexican soap opera, and not in a good way. So I couldn't tell you.
Well, we'll just have to get Kate Castillo to play his wife in the next Netflix series that she does. We'll get her to
She lives in L.A., by the way.
Oh, okay. No, but I mean, I don't want to, you know, I'm confused too. I'm certainly not an expert on Juan Gabriel, but for years, Juan Gabriel had always been this great citizen of Chihuahua who was
right.
Almost like the face of the state of Chihuahua, you know, this great, you know, guy who came from nowhere and became this big popular singer. And to find out, that all of a sudden his assets are being contested in the United States, I'm not surprised. It's not a shock, but it's interesting. It confirms a lot of the things that a lot of our suspicions that we've always had with people of means in Mexico. Well, Fausta, thank you so much for your time as always. And I wanted to focus on Venezuela today, and I appreciate Comandante Cazorla for joining us. But as always, thank you for the great work that you do, Fausta, in your blog and keeping all of us informed about what's going on down there. It's always a real treat to check with your blog every single day and to get these wonderful updates that you do. So thank you so much for joining us, and thank you for the great work that you do, Fausta.
Thank you, Julio. It's always a pleasure and an honor.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much for joining us today. Well, that's going to do it, folks. again, as I mentioned to Comandante Cacerola and all of our friends down in Venezuela, we're all thinking about you guys. I mean, this is a very bad situation down in Venezuela, and we're thinking about you, and we're really hoping that things improve down in that wonderful country of Venezuela. Bye-bye, everybody. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas.